Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, April 9th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Avelo Airlines faces backlash over deportation flight contract. Humboldt County sets a record in cannabis permitting. And county conversations with Humboldt Supervisor Michelle Bushnell. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Visit California, a nonprofit organization that promotes the state as a premier tourist destination, recently revised its 2025 travel forecast to industry partners, citing shifting sentiment from foreign travelers. In a letter to those partners, Visit California wrote in part, quote, "Late last week, Visit California revised its 2025 forecast based on the updated national outlook from Tourism Economics. We now project $160 billion in total visitor spending, down from the $166 billion and 6.2% growth we anticipated earlier this year," close quote. The letter explained that this recalibration is driven by evolving global dynamics impacting international travel. A combination of domestic economic headwinds, unfavorable exchange rates, and declining interest from travelers abroad, particularly in Canada, California's number two international market, is expected to slow inbound travel. The adjustments also reflect weaker than expected airlift from key markets and a rise in outbound travel. According to Visit California's website, travelers spent over $150 billion in the state in 2023, directly supporting more than 1.2 million jobs and generating $12.7 billion in state and local tax revenue. While the state outlook is softening, Humboldt County is seeing the opposite trend. The Department of Transportation recently released updated monthly passenger data for U.S. airports, and Humboldt's numbers are strong. In 2024, the Arcata Airport, ACV, set a new record with nearly 134,000 in-plane passengers, surpassing the previous record of 118,000, set in 2022. The addition of flights to LAX in 2018, Denver in 2019, and Hollywood Burbank in 2021 has helped boost local passenger volume. It was also a record year for load factor, a key airline metric that reflects how full planes are. ACV sold over 80% of its available seat capacity, setting a new high. However, that momentum could be at risk. One of ACV's two operating airlines, Avelo, has come under national scrutiny for signing a contract with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, with deportation flights. A Change.org petition with over 10,000 signatures reads in part, quote, "We demand that Avelo Air halt plans to carry out deportation flights in cooperation with the Trump administration. We pledge to boycott the airline until they stop plans to profit off ICE flights that are tearing families and communities apart by removing some legal residents, such as Maryland father Kilmar Abrego Garcia, with no recourse for returning to their families," close quote. Avelo's CEO has confirmed that the airline signed a contract with U.S. Department of Homeland Security to conduct deportation flights on behalf of ICE. These flights are said to operate out of Mesa, Arizona, and the company is reportedly in the process of recruiting staff to support them. The story was first reported out of Connecticut after a leaked internal memo revealed that the deportation flights are intended to help offset operating losses at Tweed Airport in New Haven. For more on the local impact and public response, we spoke with Isabella Vanderheiden of the Lost Coast Outpost, the first reporter to cover this issue in Humboldt.
I contacted Abella's spokesperson, communication manager Courtney Goff, and she basically confirmed that this contract wouldn't affect California flights and didn't specify how long the contract would be for, how much it was, or anything of that nature, but did, you know, indeed confirm and pass along the statement she had shared with other news outlets on the East Coast, saying that Abella was going to indeed enter this contract with the Department of Homeland Security.
In the leaked internal email sent by Avello CEO Andrew Levy on April 3rd, Levy acknowledged that while the company's decision to support President Donald Trump's deportation efforts may strike some as controversial, the opportunity was, quote, too valuable not to pursue, close quote. He stated that the agreement would help stabilize the budget airline's finances. Avello later confirmed to Fox News that it will have three aircraft operating out of Mesa Gateway Airport to support the department's deportation efforts. According to a spokesperson, the fleet will include three Boeing 737-800s with both domestic and international deportation flights scheduled to begin on May 12. Avello currently has six base locations, including New Haven, Connecticut, where the story first broke and quickly sparked backlash. New Haven Mayor Justin Eckler responded by saying, quote, for a company that champions themselves as New Haven's hometown airline, this business decision is antithetical to New Haven's values, close quote. KMA News has reached out to Arcata Mayor Alex Stillman for comment. However, we have not received a response as of airtime. Earlier this year, the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors released a joint statement reaffirming its support for Measure K, the county's sanctuary ordinance. The letter reads in part, quote, we commit to taking all necessary steps to ensure that this trust remains intact and that the county and elected officials within the County of Humboldt make every effort to safeguard justice and equity for everyone. We stand prepared to assert and defend these commitments, including through multiple layers of legal and policy protections already in place at the state and local levels, close quote. Both the Eureka and Arcata city councils have also passed sanctuary ordinances, Arcata in 2017 and Eureka just last month, with unanimous approvals. Unlike in Connecticut, where officials have publicly condemned Avello's actions, local Humboldt County leaders have yet to issue a statement directly addressing the airline. Despite the lack of public outcry from officials, Vanderheiden speculates that Avello could still feel the impact through a potential decline in ridership.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen just, you know, anecdotally or looking at our comments section, I mean, last I looked at that story, there were almost 800 comments on it. A lot of the folks were saying, you know, people commenting on the story itself on our website are saying, like, no, I'm boycotting Avello. I'm never flying with that airline again. So, yeah, I think people are certainly boycotting the airline. And also there's a petition that I mentioned in my story when I first wrote the story. It had about 400 signatures, I think. Now it has almost 8,000. And that petition is calling to boycott the airline. So I think that's definitely a concern.
That number has since more than doubled. At the time of this broadcast, the petition has reached over 19,000 signatures and continues to grow by the minute. Members of Humboldt County's immigrant rights organization, Centro del Pueblo, have voiced their support for the petition.
An absolute support to the boycott against Avello.
That was the group's executive director, Brenda Perez.
Avello and any airline that supports deportation and family separation doesn't have a space in a sanctuary county and in a sanctuary city. So we are calling to every customer to think twice before selecting Avello as an airline and selecting any company that is supporting immigration enforcement against immigrant families.
Perez agrees with Vanderheiden and believes the company may lose local support, despite offering $100 flights to Los Angeles.
Avelo is definitely going to feel the impact of collaborating with ICE in the decreasing of customers. I'm seeing how the number of people protesting and expressing against these actions are going to be translated into stop traveling with Avelo.
In closing, Perez says she's disappointed that the company chose profits over people.
In their statement, they express that they answer to executive orders and they collaborate with the country, but I will ask them to collaborate with the workers, with the Latino and immigrant workers from around the world, and the people, the passengers, that particularly choose Avelo because of their low cost. And these are people that sustain the airline. It's not the government sustaining the airline. It's the customers and the workers. So think about them first.
KMUD News will continue to share updates. In a first, Humboldt County's Planning Commission has approved 5 interrelated cannabis cultivation permits in a single action. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
With a planner saying Humboldt County has set a record by reviewing 5 cannabis farm projects at once, the Planning Commission proceeded to approve them at its April 3rd meeting. The 5 interrelated projects together amount to more than 3 acres of cultivation area, but with irrigation needs covered by rainwater catchment and PG&E grid power at 4 of the 5 project parcels, there weren't any obstacles to permitting. Senior planner Steven Santos described them as, quote, kind of standard cannabis projects. The grouped parcels are located in the county's southeastern area off Hog Trap Road in New Harris. The applicant for all 5 permits is Mark Finley of Garberville, doing business as Hog Trap Farms LLC and Finmark Farms LLC. Showing GIS images, Santos explained the grouping of the parcels, their water sources, and how they're related.
It's in the New Harris area, which is in the southeast corner of the county. And here's this graphic I prepared using our GIS to try and show the adjacency of the 5 projects. The 5 white polygons indicate the individual permit applications with the permit application numbers annotated. The blue splotches, also indicated by the yellow arrows, are the 3 rainwater catchment ponds that make up the backbone of the irrigation system. And the reason these 5 are being brought to the commission together is because they're interrelated in 2 ways. One is they share an irrigation system, the 3 rainwater ponds I just mentioned, and then they all process their harvested cannabis on the same parcel.
The only project in the batch with potential issues is 13,560 square feet of outdoor cultivation and 20,000 square feet of mixed light cultivation. Santos gave the details.
This particular project is the only project that is being approved under 2.0, the CCLUO, the other 4 are being done under 1.0. The reason this one is being done under 2.0 is because the applicant requested to convert an existing outdoor area to mixed light, and we would consider that new cultivation, even though it's going in a spot that's already disturbed and already being used for cultivation. And the only way to do that was through 2.0.
Santos noted a Bureau of Land Management comment letter that raised concern about potential northern spotted owl impacts, but he said it's not an issue.
We did get a BLM response on this one, expressing some concerns about northern spotted owl habitat. We received some additional, in response to that, the applicant provided additional evidence provided by a registered professional forester. The cultivation areas, the closest cultivation areas are at least 900 feet from BLM, so well beyond the 600-foot minimum. And because they're all occurring in areas already disturbed that had already been used by cannabis, there was no northern spotted owl habitat that was being implicated or impacted by the proposal. And so even if we had referred the other projects to BLM, I think it's safe to assume that we would have gotten a similar letter from BLM and would have been able to make the same findings as we did on this one, since this one is the closest.
According to a written staff report, the permit's conditions of approval include controls on lighting, prohibiting use of synthetic netting for erosion control, and requiring wildlife-proof refuse containers. The other projects range in size from 7,200 square feet to 40,000 square feet. All the projects are pre-existing and were unanimously approved in a single vote. Also on the agenda was a project in the Garberville area that aims to combine cultivation, non-volatile manufacturing, distribution, and nursery operations. It was on the meeting's consent agenda of routine items, but was continued to the next meeting. The project has gotten some complaints about grading and development activities and activities related to use of Sawmill Road as an access. The hearing for the project is set for the commission's April 17th meeting. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In tonight's edition of County Conversations, our monthly check-in with Humboldt County Supervisors, we speak with Michelle Bushnell, who represents Humboldt's 2nd District, which includes the cities and unincorporated towns along the 101 corridor from Benbow to Fortuna, and stretches east to west from Bridgeville to Shelter Cove. Supervisor Bushnell shared updates on Highway 36, Measure S cannabis permit revocation, and an update on the Garberville Vet's Hall. Good afternoon, Supervisor Bushnell. I want to start with Highway 36. You recently held a town hall with Caltrans to keep the community informed about the frequently changing status of the road near Grizzly Creek due to ongoing slides. Can you update on what was shared at that meeting?
Sure. Thanks. So last Friday, I had a large amount of folks at the Bridgeville Church, Caltrans, the county was there, CHP was there, and the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department was there. Concerns about how many projects are between like Dinsmore Store and Fortuna. A lot of concerns about being able to get people to school on time. And then also for commerce, you know, logging trucks, cement trucks. Last year had a terrible time. And so we were able to talk to Caltrans about that and what their plans are. They were able to adjust some times for the school, for Bridgeville School, and then for the high school and Carlotta, Hydesville area schools. A lot of what we learned was lack of communication, really good, solid information. And so I agreed to be kind of a contact point for meal times, school times, those types of things so that they can try to adjust how many, the stops and how long the stops will be. You know, the thing with the Highway 36 construction is that they have a pot of money that they've been working towards for around 8 years, finally got that pot of money, and they have a certain amount of time that they have to complete the construction projects. And unfortunately, emergency construction at Grizzly Creek has happened also with that mountain coming down. And so they have the set amount of projects and this then this emergency stuff that happened. And it makes it really problematic in a short amount of time. They have agreed to try to limit the stops. But of course, if a mountain comes down in the middle of the road, they can't, that's not in their control and they have to stop. And ultimately, what their requirement is to keep people safe. And so if that mountain is active, they're not going to let people through. The go around is to go out Neyland Road and then hit Redwood House Road and come back around. And that's where the county comes in. That's County Road. And that road also has taken a beating with the extra construction, that's going on. And then the extra traffic that's going on. The county is trying to keep that road a little safer with some extra rock and so forth and so on. But it's a narrow road, one lane, ranch road. And so it's also not doing great. And so going forward, I think what Caltrans has said is better communication on times, try to be open more often for the summer hours for the logging trucks and the commerce to get through, and people, of course. They're letting emergency vehicles through. That, of course, is a top priority for them. But the bottom line is that the construction has to get done. And this is their window of construction time as well. And so they're going to go ahead with the construction, just hopeful that the close times won't be so long.
In other road news, I believe Measure O has just took effect.
It's just started April 1st. Everybody knows, good April Fool's Day, but everybody knows that sales tax in Humboldt County went up 1%. And so unincorporated used to be 7.75, is now 8.75. And that is for Measure O, which is a road tax for Humboldt County roads. And so it'll be 4 months before we see any money. It's quarterly that you get those funds. And the county is actively talking about projects now that they're going to be starting with that money. Yearly, we're supposed to get around $24 million for that money, but some of that money also will go to public transit.
We've recently heard some debate as some folks want the funds to support transit projects, while others want the money to go towards improving rural roads. How is the county planning on allocating the funds? Is there a way for the public to weigh in? And how will these decisions be made?
Sure. So there's a committee. There'll be a committee similar to the Measure Z committee that will be rating projects and on the road for the roads portion. We already have a lot of projects lined up that haven't been able to be funded over the last few years. One of those projects includes the Garberville Complete Streets project, which we've been trying to get funding for over 10 years. But as far as the percentages go, the Board of Supervisors will make that decision. There's a committee that is formed of two supervisors, an ad hoc, and Public Works, and some folks, HCOG, and then public transit people. And so they're going to be recommending to the board a percentage split between public transit and Humboldt County roads. And then that recommendation will come to our full board of supervisors, and then that the final decision rests on the Board of Supervisors. So you can hit up your local supervisor, come to the meeting, talk at the meeting, and that those percentages should be coming to our board, I believe, within the next 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks.
Switching gears to Measure S, last time we spoke, I believe 21 cannabis permits had been revoked and the board was considering action on roughly 200 more. Can you give us an update on where things stand with permit holders?
Sure. So there was a Measure S discussion that came, I believe, around March 28th, and anybody that hadn't paid their Measure S was supposed to be revocated after March 31st. The board pushed anybody that had made one single payment to Measure S to December 31st, 2025. There were 210 permits that had no payments on them. We gave them 5 days to come in and make a payment. Or they are going to be up for revocation. Only one person made a payment out of those 210. So that's 209 permits now that will be coming in front of the board for revocation. And then the other folks have until December 31st. This is going to be a hard line that on December 31st, if you have not completed your payment plan for your Measure S and have a zero balance, you are going to be revocated. That was a really hard discussion at the board. Additionally, last year, 10% of Measure S was reinstated. And then this year, this growing season is back to zero. It's kind of wishy-washy, but those 10% bills are going to be coming out in the next 3 weeks. So not only are you going to have your back due Measure S that's due, you also are going to have your current due. The current 10% for last year growing season, you have 30 days to pay that. There are not going to be any exceptions to that. So it's a lot again for the cultivators, but I'm hopeful that they'll have this growing season to try to make some money to be able to pay their, if you have past due, to pay their past due by the December 31st time.
And with time running out on the clock, I want to turn to George K. Mullins, Southern Humboldt's oldest veteran, who is turning 100 this month. I know he had hoped to celebrate his birthday at the new Veterans Hall in Garberville. I'm wondering if you'd like to share a message for George and other veterans in our community.
Sure. So we're getting ready to have that contract. The bids went out and we got an acceptable bid, and those are getting ready to come back to the board. I'm hopeful that we'll be breaking ground this spring. We will be breaking ground this spring. And I am so bummed that George Mullins is not going to be able to have his 100th birthday at the Vets Hall like he wanted. We could set up tables over there on site, though, if it's a nice day. And I just wish him a happy birthday. I'll be seeing him before his birthday. But I am so hopeful by February 2026 that we will have a Vets building up and ready to have action happen in there.
George was in the 101st Airborne, so his 101st birthday will be extra special at the Vets Hall.
Well, thanks for having me, Lauren, always. I know these updates are super important for the community, and thanks for everything that KMed does.
Again, that was Humboldt County Supervisor Michelle Bushnell speaking during our monthly check-in. You can tune in for our discussions with the 2nd District Supervisor on the second Wednesday of each month. In national news, House passes Republican bill aimed at blocking federal courts from blocking Trump agenda. KPFA's Chris Pringle reports.
California Republican Congressman Daryl Issa introduced the No Rogue Rulings, or NORA Act, earlier this year. It quickly became a priority among Republican lawmakers. President Trump has faced more than 15 nationwide court injunctions since taking office, from an effort to eliminate birthright citizenship to attempts to undo diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Congressman Issa said the district courts have strayed out of their lane.
In recent years, it has become glaringly obvious that federal judges are overstepping their constitutional bounds under Article 3 of the Constitution, which applies that lower courts are created under statute by the Congress.
But Democrats argue that by going after the federal district courts, the bill seeks to limit one of the main constitutional checks on executive power. Maryland Democrat Jamie Raskin is the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. He said the courts have been the only real constraint on a chaotic first few weeks of Trump's second term.
The problem is that this bill does not address any of the real major policy crises of the first 100 days that Trump has caused for America. They are wasting our time with this bill by misdiagnosing and mislabeling the judicial response to these crises as a crisis itself.
Republicans said the number of district court injunctions against Trump are out of whack with judgments against other presidents. Mark Harris is a North Carolina GOP representative.
To put how unprecedented this is into perspective, President Trump has faced more than twice as many nationwide injunctions as Presidents Bush, Obama, and Biden combined. In addition, more than 90% of these nationwide injunctions have been issued by Democrat-appointed judges. I'm calling this what it is: weaponized political lawfare.
North Carolina Democrat Deborah Ross says the U.S. Constitution recognizes the authority of the Supreme Court and any lower courts that Congress may have created. She says President Trump and his Republican allies find that provision inconvenient.
But now that the courts are blocking his unconstitutional and unlawful actions, Donald Trump wants to claim the power for himself and his administration. Trump does not subscribe to the principle of judicial review, and he doesn't believe in the sanctity of the Constitution. He cares only about himself and getting his own way.
Congresswoman Ross said Trump has called out federal judges who rule against him by name, which has opened them up to threats and harassment from his supporters, and she says is a clear violation of his presidential oath to protect and defend the Constitution. New York Democrat Dan Goldman called on congressional Republicans to stop complaining about the federal courts and instead live up to their constitutional responsibilities.
My colleagues complain about the high number of nationwide injunctions during the first 3 months of this presidency. Well, rather than blame the judges for that, I've got an idea. Stop breaking the law. This is a bad bill that gets us nowhere other than toward autocracy.
A similar bill is now working its way through the U.S. Senate. It's sponsored by Iowa GOP Senator Chuck Grassley. For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz and Chris Pringle. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org. And now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. If you have a question or comment, you can email us at news@kmud.org. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.